This episode is sponsored by me, Andy Hill, the host of this show. If you're looking for someone to support you on your family, wealth, and happiness journey, I'm taking on a select number of coaching clients this year. To work with me one-on-one for your family finances, go to marriagekidsandmoney.com/coaching to learn more. I would encourage you to celebrate your journey instead of waiting for the destination. This can also boost buy-in from your spouses, your partners, or your children who feel less enthusiastic about a budget. This show is dedicated to helping you strengthen your family tree and live financially free. Welcome to the Marriage, Kids, and Money podcast, everybody. This is Andy Hill, and today we're going to do three different things. First, I'll be sharing how to create a family budget. Now, with the difficult financial times some families are in at this moment, creating some intentionality with our money is more important than ever, everyone. Second, we are back with our FinTech Spotlight segment. This month, we are featuring our sponsor, Ethos. Marty Evans from Ethos is going to be joining us to answer the question, how much life insurance do I really need? And last but not least, we're back with another money quiz with my daughter, Zoe. She's going to be reading the review of the month, and then I'm going to be quizzing her on some money questions. And we're just going to test her knowledge, and hopefully you can play along at home as well. All right, let's jump into today's show. Build a budget. Yeah, that's one of the most common pieces of personal finance advice. You've heard it on this show. After I finish those interviews, I say, what's one piece of advice that you'd leave the audience with so they can achieve the same type of financial future or financial benefits that you have? And what do they say? Most of the time they say, build a budget, right? But a Gallup survey found that about 2 in 3 households don't keep a detailed budget. It's true that some families never start at all, but others give up on them after busting their budgets month after month. Now, if you've ever wondered how to create a family budget that works, well, we've got the show for you. We're going to help you set up a family budget that fits your goals in 8 simple steps. All right, let's dive in. Step number 1, find your family's why. For a lot of people, budget, that B word, man, it is a dirty word, right? But why is that? Well, budgets feel constraining and they feel restrictive. If your budget is feeling like a form of, I don't know, financial torture for your family, there's a good chance you skip the most important step of budgeting. It's finding your why. As a family, you want to establish your goals. What do you hope to do for yourselves with a budget? Long-term goals might include things like saving for your kids' college funds so they can have a bright future, or buying a new family car, or short-term goals like affording a much-needed family vacation, or stashing away enough cash to have a debt-free Christmas without the credit card stress. Decide on your goal or your goals as a family and then write them down. Choosing your goal together boosts that buy-in from all family members. Additionally, the visual reminder of your goals can help you stay motivated. Maybe you got them plastered on that refrigerator, right? Make sure to revisit these goals regularly over the next few months of budgeting. That way, you can see how your budget is helping your goals take shape. Step number 2. Calculate your income. Do you know how much money you make? Well, it sounds like a really silly question, but a lot of families operate on guesses and hunches rather than concrete numbers. That's why the next step of building your family budget is to calculate your income. Total up your paychecks for the month. You might also want to factor in any side hustle income or things that you sell online through Craigslist or Facebook Marketplace as well. Of course, this gets trickier if your income varies month by month. In that case, you want to work with the lowest numbers rather than the highest. That way, you know you can cover the expenses in your budget no matter what. If you end up having a higher income month, that's great, right? That's more money to stash in your savings or to pay down debt. Step number 3, examine your expenses. After you calculate your income, it's time to look at those expenses with a fine-tooth comb. As with your income, expenses can also take some family members by surprise. To get a ballpark approximation of your spending, you can look at your credit card or your debit card or your checking account statements and see what your activity has been over the past few months. Total up your spending. Make sure to add in the spending across your accounts if you have multiple accounts. It's worth noting that this math doesn't always cover what you spend in cash. Still, your calculation should give you a fairly decent ballpark amount. To get a more precise look at your expenses, you can also commit to tracking your spending for the next month. Don't judge your spending or try to eliminate expenses. Instead, do your best to capture a full and accurate picture of what you're currently spending, the reality stuff, right? You can do this manually, or you can do this with an app like Mint or Empower or Monarch Money. You've heard me talk about all of those on the show. Step number four, build a budget. Once you have an approximate number to work with your income and a ballpark amount for your expenses, it's time to build that family budget. If you want to know how to create a family budget effectively, you have to understand budget categories. Of course, no two budgets are the same. Still, one budgeting rule of thumb that may serve you well is to start with the 50-30-20 rule. With this rule, your budget can be thought of in three broad ways. First, you got needs. That's 50% of your budget. That goes towards the needs. That's like housing, groceries, utility bills, things like that. Then you got your wants. That's 30% of your budget for things like fun money or sinking funds for vacations, things like that. And then finally, you got savings at 20%. That's the 20. And that makes up your investing for retirement or saving for short and long-term goals. Now, consider the 50-30-20 rule of thumb and then list out the different categories that fit in your family's needs, wants, and savings goals. Some budget categories to include to get the ball rolling might be things like rent or your mortgage payment, groceries, your cell phone bill, your internet bill, your electricity bill, student loan payments, insurance, eating out of the house, daycare. I know that can be a big one for families. Now, I know this is not a complete list, but the key is to examine your own needs and your wants, as well as your savings goals. Build your budget categories and your budget amounts around the specifics of your family. After you have the general sense of what your budget categories are, it's time to use a budgeting tool to make the budget actually come together. Now, for some families, that's as simple as opening up an Excel sheet or using something like Google Sheets just to create your own version. You can also use a budgeting app, as I mentioned, like Mint. That has been fantastic for our family. We've used it for over 10 years. It's free. It keeps things simple. Now, there are a lot of really great apps besides Mint out there that come with a little bit of cost. I like Monarch Money a lot. I like YNAB a lot. Check out those ones as a way to make things a little more simple without all the ads. Mint has ads on it. It's kind of annoying sometimes, and it's not the best for everything, but free is a really hard price to fight. So that's why we've stuck with Mint, just because it's simple and easy, and our stuff's been in there for like 10 years. So the biggest benefit of using an app like this is it just saves a lot of time and it reduces that family stress because it's all in one place. If starting from scratch sounds intimidating, definitely consider a budgeting app. This makes the process a lot easier. Step number five, track your spending. One of the biggest mistakes people make when they want to create a family budget is to set up a budget at the start of the month and then completely ignore it. Instead, take an active, eyes-open approach to your budget by tracking your spending throughout the month. Many times, budget apps, they take care of this for you, which helps. In other instances, families choose to track their expenses manually, or they use cash envelopes, or they monitor spending with tools that are built into the debit or credit cards, or they rely on a separate spending tracker app. No matter what you choose, you want to make sure that you monitor your money as the month goes on. That will help you avoid huge surprises at the end of the month. You know, if you set it up at the beginning and then you look at it at the end and you're like, oh my gosh, what actually happened here? it's going to require a little bit of hands-on, eyes-on activity. Step six, review your month. Once you create a family budget, you are not off the hook. Instead, you want to review your monthly budget. The first few times you do this, you'll probably need to set aside a decent chunk of time. I already hear you groaning as you're listening to this show, but it's so important. If you want to get those goals done, you got to do this. These budget check-ins that you do, maybe with your spouse or your broader family that's involved, they don't have to be a drag. You can make it fun. Some couples review their family budget with wine and appetizers. Now, if you want to make it a full family affair, you can tie it into pizza night. You can tie it into game night. You can tie it into something that makes it a little bit more fun. And you don't always have to talk about money, right? Talk about those goals. You can talk about how close you're getting to those things that you want, right? The most important thing to do is to compare your actual spending with your budget. This is where the budgeting apps, again, can be a huge time saver because most of the data is compiled for you. No matter how you keep track of your budget and your spending, the reflection process, that should be similar. How close were you to staying within your budget? You also want to remind yourself and your family about your budgeting goals. This is a good time to reflect on those goals. Keeping that why in mind is an excellent motivator. Step seven, recalibrate your budget. Yeah, after comparing your actual spending to your budget, it's time to recalibrate for the next month. If there were areas that were a major budget buster, consider adjusting the amount of money you set aside for them or reining in your spending moving forward. Once you've figured out how to create a family budget and made your initial adjustments, you can probably use the same budget from month to month. The process gets slightly easier. However, anytime there is a major life event on the horizon, you want to consider drafting a new budget. Step eight, celebrate your wins. Now for the best part. Celebrations. Yes, families often mistakenly only celebrate when they hit their long-term financial goals. I would encourage you to celebrate your journey instead of waiting for the destination. This can also boost buy-in from your spouses, your partners, or your children who feel less enthusiastic about a budget. You know, obviously, if you're listening to the show about how to create one, maybe you are the one that's going to be leading the charge. So you got to make this a little fun. You got to make it exciting. So what are some things you can do to celebrate? Well, everything from building a budget for the first time to stay on track with a previous month's trouble spot is worth celebrating. Of course, don't let your celebration sabotage your budget. Make it frugal fun, like pizza night or family game night or exploring new parks or impromptu dance parties or even a bit of extra screen time for the kids are all ways to reward your family without breaking the bank. All right, now are you ready to finally build a budget that works for your family? If you just follow these eight steps that we just went through, you'll be able to set up a budget framework that matches your family's specific goals. Now, if you really want help with the budget process, highly, highly suggest downloading a family budgeting app that makes the process easier. I've got a list of all of them on the show notes of this show, and you can click right to them and then get one that works best for you. They all have different customizations. They have different ways to cater to different families, and I've got a whole list for you. Some of them are paid, some of them are free. We use Mint. That doesn't mean there are these other ones out there that can't help you. Either way, we've got a list for you in the show notes. Take advantage of that and really make the process easier and hit these big family financial goals that you have. Well, enough from my side. I want to hear from you. What budgeting tools do you use to make the process easier? Do you have any questions on how to create a family budget that works for you? Please let me know by sharing this episode on social media and tagging me on Instagram or Facebook at Marriage Kids and Money or at Andy Hill MKM on LinkedIn. I would love to keep the conversation going. Are you looking for someone to walk alongside you on your journey to family financial independence? Well, I would love to help you achieve your goals and help your family thrive. I work with couples, individuals, and families all around the U.S. via video chat and can assist in the following areas: becoming debt-free, growing your net worth, crafting and sticking to your budget, reviewing coast fire plans, developing strategies to build generational wealth for your kids, and designing your future work optional lifestyle. Doesn't that sound nice? If you're interested in working with me one-on-one, you can book a time with me by visiting marriagekidsandmoney.com/coaching. I would love to help you strengthen your family tree and live financially free. Visit marriagekidsandmoney.com/coaching to learn more, or you can click the link in our show description. If you're looking to improve your financial situation, it helps when you're able to cut out unnecessary costs. Cell phone services are a necessity for sure, but we don't need to be overpaying for them, right? That's why I like Telo Mobile, a phone service worth talking about. We've been fully on board as a family with Telo for over 2 years now, and we are so happy that we made the switch. For us, the reception and data service is better than Verizon, and our costs were nearly cut in half. Telo runs on the T-Mobile network, and it's wowing new customers like us with their rock-bottom prices and stellar service. With over 10,000 reviews, Telo is rated as excellent on Trustpilot, and this is quite rare in the wireless world. Nicole and I went for the unlimited data, minutes, and texting plan for only $25 per month each. Isn't that crazy? You heard that right. $25 is their most expensive plan, actually. And Telo is running a special offer for MKM listeners right now. Check out Telo today at marriagekidsandmoney.com/Telo. That's marriagekidsandmoney.com/Telo. And use the code MKM20 to get 20% off on your first month of service for any Telo plan above that $10 per month mark. Again, use MKM20 to get 20% off at marriagekidsandmoney.com/Telo, and you'll be supporting this show. Hurry up. The code is valid until April 19th, 2024. marriagekidsandmoney.com/Telo. For our FinTech Spotlight segment this month, we are featuring our sponsor, Ethos, affordable online life insurance for families. I've invited a member of the Ethos Enterprise Account Management Team, Marty Evans, on the show to help us answer the question, how much life insurance do I actually need and how Ethos can help? Welcome to the show, Marty.
I'm excited to be here. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely, man. Well, this is an important topic for families, and it could be one that's kind of confusing too for families. So I'm glad that we're here to talk about it. First of all, why is it important for parents to have life insurance in the first place?
Yeah, I mean, it's not the most exciting, you know, dinner conversation to think about. Well, what would happen if you weren't here with your family anymore? But the reality is you really need to have all of your bases covered if something were to happen. And in the event that, for instance, a breadwinner of a family were to pass away, about half of those families in the U.S. experience a financial hardship within 6 months. So the severity is immediate and it's severe. So it's something that you just don't want to end up with your family in that position.
Yeah, it's a very good point. Again, not something we all want to think about, but important that we're discussing it today. Let's talk about the question then, how much life insurance does someone need?
Well, if you start from the framework of, well, what would I want my family's income to go towards? Then that's when you can really expand your both planning and your imagination and just self-reflection on what's important to you and what would you want to contribute to. So the quick and easy rule of thumb is just 10 times your income. And so just add a zero onto what you regularly earn. And a lot of people will think, well, I'm actually good. I don't need a policy because I get coverage at work. But the work coverage is typically only one time your salary. And if you were to leave that job, then you also are leaving your policy. So you won't have coverage anymore. 10 times your income is the quick and easy math. The more involved way is called the DIME method, D-I-M-E. And so you just work through your debts, excluding your mortgage. So you go through your debts, and this can be credit card debt, student loan debt, all of the forms of just amounts that you owe. Your income times the number of years you would want to replace your income. And so especially for parents, thinking about those child rearing years, those are important years. You'd want to have someone to be able to provide for your kids' needs. Next, the M is your mortgage, whatever's remaining on your mortgage so that your family can stay in their home. And then finally, the E is the education that you would like to provide. So this could be a college fund for your kids. It could also be a college fund. Something that I get really excited about is every birthday, I contribute to my niece's 529 plan. So part of what I would want to contribute to is actually making sure they have the education opportunities I'd like them to have.
I applaud you on being the super cool uncle for doing that. You know, you and I also talked about this previously. We're in a different generation for some folks in this 20s to 40s range where they call us the sandwich generation, or as we get a little closer to our 40s, we're taking care of other people outside of our immediate family too. Talk about that and how life insurance plays into that.
A personal story, my mom, she's been a hardworking nurse all of her life, and she's a little apprehensive about retirement, and she doesn't think she's saved enough. And I try and, you know, assure her and say, you don't need to worry, I'm going to make sure that you're good. And so largely, actually, the most motivating factor for me right now, not having a child, and my wife, she's very gainfully employed, so she'd be fine without me, as crazy as that might sound. I really want to make sure my mom could retire comfortably and live well. So actually the first like sense of urgency for me is making sure my income could go towards supporting my mom's retirement after all that she's done for me. So I'd certainly think about not just who's below you in age, your children or laterally your spouses, but also your parents, your uncles, your grandparents that you might need to actually support as well.
These are good conversations too, especially if you're married, just maybe sit down and have these conversations with your spouse. Again, not you know the most exciting Friday night conversation, but it's an important one for sure. So when we're looking at these amounts, right? Okay, so maybe we need to determine the amount that we need. How long do we need this life insurance for? How do we determine that?
I'd say the rule of thumb is just thinking through, and this is where you could maybe pivot that conversation from this is dreadful and I'm thinking about me dying to actually, this is me thinking of how would I want my will to be carried out? How would I want my wishes and the things that I find important to come to fruition? And so thinking about, well, what are those crucial spending years? And typically your 40s are your peak spending years, your 50s are your peak earning years that I would like to have coverage. So the easy numbers that come up is making sure your kids are good, you know, through college, making sure that your mortgage is paid off, making sure that any of those vulnerable years are certainly covered. And this could be also the vulnerable years of, you know, early retirement for your parents. And so that is going to depend on each situation, but just really map out what's important when and when might that change is how I would start with thinking of what are the term durations that are most important to me.
I think that's great. You know, one thing that I haven't done and I probably do need to do is sort of reevaluating my life after getting a policy. I think I got our policies 10 plus years ago. And our lives are very different than 10 plus years ago. So how important is it, or why is it important to reevaluate your life insurance situation as your life evolves?
Things change so rapidly. Like as I mentioned, the children that I'm contributing to college funds aren't even my children. So you've got your family changing around you. You've got your own family changing. Maybe you've moved. Maybe you're in, I live in the Bay Area. Maybe your cost of living is higher than the insurance policy I would have bought when I was in North Carolina. So it's just really important. I'd say every year is a reasonable frequency to just consider. Take a moment. Has anything changed? If not, then I'm fine. If something has changed, then let's think, am I covering the amount and the duration that I previously realized was important for me?
Yeah, that makes sense. Let's talk about if maybe somebody lives in the Bay Area. Let's talk about that. You know, there's one high earning spouse and then the other one has decided to be at home and raise the children and then stop their career for a period of time. So they're not earning an income, but man, are they providing such a valuable service. Why is it important for that stay-at-home parent to also consider life insurance?
It's critical largely because if you just think about replacement cost is a little austere because you're not replacing that loved one, but if you just think of what it would cost to continue the amount of impact that that family member had been providing, it's expensive. As we were discussing earlier, estimates have that north of $180,000 a year. And when you really think about it, you're contributing the direct let's say, support for transportation, for care, for food, for things like that. But there's also, most likely, you're not going to be able to pay one person to work all of the hours that stay-at-home parents are providing. So you're probably going to have to actually pay for many people to do this. And that's all assuming that you don't have additional support from family members in the area. My wife and I don't have family here. So we know that any type of support that we'd have to pay for would be completely paid. And we don't have a family to help absorb some of those costs. So it's critical for that unpaid, you know, work to be considered and what it would cost to actually continue those services.
That's a really good point, especially for those folks that don't have family near them to help out. You know, another point on that is I interviewed a gentleman named Juan here in Michigan who lost his wife very early on in their marriage, and that was very devastating. Not only did the life insurance that they received support with those important tasks and functions that were part of their relationship, it also gave him time to grieve, gave him and his daughter time to grieve too, and not going right back into work. You know what I mean? Like, it's just having that ability to have a pause in between to say, okay, we're totally reevaluating our lives, and having the financial stability to do that can be monumental, really, in a time that is very important in both your life as well as any children that you have as well. Let's talk about Ethos in this process. So how does Ethos support with this life insurance process?
For sure. Well, Ethos has really started to tackle this big problem of many, many Americans being underinsured. And so when we really thought about, well, why is that? Part of it is just because the process of getting it has over time become associated with things you don't want. You got to go through a very long medical exam. You have to have blood drawn. You have to have urine samples collected. Maybe you're waiting 8 to 10 weeks to get a no after all of that. And we just realized, well, no wonder so many people aren't getting life insurance. It's such a painful process. So at Ethos, we're a technology company that's really leveraging technology to solve many of these challenges in the life insurance space to make it as democratized, as fast, and as transparent as possible, so you get what you need as quickly and easily as you can. And so that's really where Ethos, you know, tries to brighten up a otherwise pretty dark process of getting this coverage.
Can you walk us through just the general steps? Somebody goes to your website, and then how does the process work from there?
Yep, log into their website, and then from there, it's probably going to shock you how easy it is. It'll feel like you're answering a few questions, and then all of a sudden, you've done something that you might have been putting off for years. So it's a roughly 10-minute process. There's no medical exams, as I mentioned. It's all online. You're just answering a few health and lifestyle questions. And in the process of going through those questions about yourself and your lifestyle and your health history, you're actually being considered for a suite of products. We actually work with 4 life insurance carriers that we make proprietary products with them. So we make products especially with them that give you an opportunity to be considered for a range of different coverage options so that we can cover over 95% of households. It's not you're applying for one thing, you didn't get it, sorry. It's you apply for one thing and, well, this might not be the best fit or you might not qualify, but we have this product for you. All of that happens under the hood. And at the end of, you know, a roughly 10-minute process, you have many same-day coverage options that you can bind all online.
So the major excuse for people is, it's going to take a while. I don't really want to do that, the online stuff. And then another excuse might be like, well, cost, you know, those things are expensive. Talk to us about cost. What can somebody expect to pay?
That's something that we consistently find that our consumers or the families that we protect have vastly overestimated what the actual cost of, for instance, a simple term life policy is. And so for, let's say, a 35-year-old woman who's healthy and doesn't smoke, with Ethos, for less than $20 a month, she could gain coverage of about $500,000. So if she's making, you know, $50,000 a year, we said that quick rule of thumb, 10 times your salary, she could meet that estimate for less than $20 a month and have that done in, you know, 30 minutes today on her cell phone.
My Spotify's going up to like $20 a month. So if I can afford Spotify per month, I can afford this, right? Absolutely. So you talked about Ethos as a company. You guys are technology focused. What makes you stand out amongst the other folks that are out there? I'm sure there's a lot of people getting a lot of emails from different places or going on Instagram and seeing ads that they should have life insurance. What makes Ethos different?
Yeah, so our broad range of coverage options and the ease and the speed are certainly the most immediate things that come to mind, but we also have been continually improving what offerings we make available, such as with most term policies, clients can get a free estate planning tools, so they can get the ability to plan their will, their trust, advanced medical directives. All of these things come with most term policies. It depends on the state what exactly, but we're really a company that's built end to end to make this process as easy as possible, including if the unfortunate time does come, that policy needs to be redeemed. The experience is just with Ethos. So you get that seamless interface and ease of accessing policy documents all from your client portal, which can be accessed on phone, tablet, laptop, desktop. So just making that experience seamless from end to end, from application to policy administration, is what we really try and make life insurance not as prickly a pear as it's been for so long.
Well, it sounds like you guys have had some good feedback from customers too. Can you share any personal stories of any feedback from customers that you had that we might want to share today?
Yeah, I actually was speaking to a company that actually is a life insurance company that would like to provide Ethos to their clients. And when I was going through a demonstration, I actually had one of the gentlemen said, well, I'd love to interrupt if I can, as I was showing the screenshots of what the process looks like. He said, I actually was an Ethos customer just 3 months ago before I even started working at this life insurance company. And it just 10 minutes, I thought I was answering some questions to get a quote. And then I realized that I'd actually already applied. I bound coverage immediately. I got my wife started and it was just so quick. I was like, I had to call in to make sure I really had gotten coverage. And they're like, yes, sir, you're all good. We got you set up. And he was in shock and awe as a customer before he even became a partner to work on providing this opportunity. So it's just shocking how seamless it is. And that's what we really strive to improve day over day, week over week.
I love technology. I love what FinTech has done to processes like this and what Ethos is doing. Marty, this is fantastic. As you guys all know, as we talked about at the top of the show, Ethos is a sponsor of this podcast. So if you want to check out Ethos, you can go to marriagekidsandmoney.com/ethos and support the show and get your super fast lightning quote, as Marty talked about already. Marty, thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Oh, it's been a pleasure. Thanks for having me and have a great rest of your week.
As a quick reminder, this show is for entertainment purposes only, my friends. Be sure to seek out a professional for your specific situation. Now, to keep this show running and to honestly help your buddy Andy smile, I'd like to ask you to do one quick favor for this show. If you like the show, please leave us a positive rating and review in Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That type of feedback helps more people find and consider this show. To encourage you to leave a review, each month we do a book giveaway. So we received 6 reviews since our last book giveaway offer. This quarter, we're giving away 3 different book options from past podcast guests. They are as follows: The Good Life, Lessons from the World's Longest Scientific Study of Happiness by Robert Waldinger and Mark Schultz. And then The Cafe on the Edge of the World by John Strelecki. And Money Made Easy, How to Budget, Pay Off Debt, and Save Money by Allison Baggerly. And to help me pick a winner this week, I've got Zoe Hill, my daughter, here with me once again. How's it going, Zoe Hill?
Hello, it's going.
It's going, yeah. You've been busy lately. You've got a lot of things going on. School, yeah. What else?
Soccer, basketball. Yeah. Not cross country anymore.
Yeah, you tried cross country. Tell people about what happened with cross country.
Cross country was just not for me, I don't think, because there's this one time where I was like out of breath and we had to run 6 miles straight with no water break. And the coaches were like not having it. Like they were pretty strict. So yeah. I just decided to quit.
So you tried to try something else. So like, yeah. And so instead of saying we're done with sports altogether, you're like, oh, let me try basketball. And now what do you think about basketball?
I love basketball. It's That's very good. Fun. I really like it.
That's cool. You got some nice coaches. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we got to try different things, right?
Yeah.
So, well, cool. Good for you. I'm glad you're using your athletic abilities and your school knowledge. I'm so proud of you. I love you. Speaking of knowledge, Zoe, I want you to do a money quiz with me before we do the review. How does that sound?
Good.
All right, here we go. Question number one. You recently started your soccer season, as you just said, and I love watching you play. I just like sitting there in my super cool chair and just cheering you on, sometimes a little too loudly, right?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I'm like the obnoxious parent on the sideline.
Well, they're all obnoxious.
Yay, so I fit in then, right?
Yeah, you fit in.
There you go. Well, speaking of soccer, the women's FIFA tournament concluded last month, which we watched, which was a lot of fun, and Spain ended up winning the whole thing. Now, the question to you, how much money did each player on the Spain team earn for winning the Women's World Cup? Is it A, $27,000 each? Is it B, $270,000 each? Or C, $2.7 million each?
Is it B?
It's B, $270,000 each for each Spain team member. You know what? It's a lot less than the men's winners. So read into that. How you
think?
That's
messed up.
It is messed up, but it used to be a lot lower just recently. So they're making strides in a little bit of equality. And I know that a lot of us watched that tournament. So hopefully the amount of people that watched it, the amount of advertisers that came in brought a lot more money into the sport. So these incredible female athletes can make more money in the future and hopefully inspire younger female athletes to want to pursue it as well. Anyway, that's a whole ball of wax. Question number two. Credit card debt, Zoe, in our country has now exceeded $1 trillion. So what that means is that people are spending more money than they have, and they're borrowing the money to pay for the things that they don't have money for. So my question to you, Zoe, is when you're shopping for your next shirt at Five Below or your next Robux or some awesome candy, what is the first thing you need to do before you buy something with your debit card? What's the first thing you need to do?
Check your balance.
Check your balance, right? Check your balance and see how much money you have before you buy the thing, right?
Yeah, I was a little loud.
You were. But that is the correct answer. And I want you to remember that for the rest of your life, because sometimes we inflate our lifestyles or we get caught up in buying things that we don't have money for, and then we get in trouble, right? So good for you for checking your balance beforehand. That is a correct answer. Way to go, Zoe. Question number three. Halloween.
I love Halloween. Like, literally, period. I love Halloween.
Is it your favorite holiday?
No.
It's not. Oh, what's your favorite holiday?
Christmas.
Okay,
I love hot chocolate.
You know what? Based on your two favorites, this question is very relevant because according to the National Retail Federation's annual survey, what is the expected amount Americans will spend in total on Halloween-related activities this year? And it's second.
I probably spent a lot of it.
You've already spent.
I have like a lot of decorations in my room.
Right.
Like, I went over.
Now, before you bought those decorations, what did you do?
Checked my balance.
There you go. All right. Well, back to the question here. Now, how much are people expected to spend this year on Halloween-related activities? Is it A, $122,000? This is in total, not individually, like the whole country, right?
Oh, the entire country.
The entire country. So $122,000, or B, $12,200,000, or C, $12.2 billion.
Is it C?
It's C. It's $12.2 billion is going to be spent on Halloween. This is the second most spending that would happen based on a holiday in our country. The first most spending, what do you think the holiday that gets the most spending?
Probably Christmas.
Christmas. You're right. Absolutely. So Halloween is right up there, though, with a lot of spending happening. But of course, as you said, before we buy the little cute Halloween decorations or pumpkins or outfits or lawn decorations, we need to do what first?
Check your balance
to make sure you have enough money to actually buy those things so you don't end up in credit card debt from Halloween. All right, let's do these reviews here, Zoe. So we got 6 reviews. Can you talk to our digital friend and...
Hey, Google, pick a number between 1 and 6.
6.
All right, well, our 6th review that came in is from Miss Tercero, and that individual left this very nice review.
Day 1. I came across this podcast today, and I'm so glad I did. I also have a 10 and a 9-year-old daughters that also love to play Roblox just like yours, and it's so inspiring to have your kids involved. I cannot wait to hear more. Thank you.
Awesome. That's great, Ms. Tercero. Thank you so much for writing in and sharing that with us. Yes, my daughter definitely loves herself some Roblox. Isn't that right, Zoe?
Yes, Roblox and Target, my main priority.
There we go. Roblox and Target. And another reason you like working for Hill Media LLC, so you can go to Target and buy Robux. Yeah. Yes, absolutely. All right. Thank you very much for that review, Ms. Tercero. If you can please send us a screenshot and an email, that way I can connect with you because I don't have your email. I want to give you one of these free books that we talked about here from our past podcast guests. So if you could email me at andy@marriagekidsandmoney.com, that would be great. Everyone, we're going to be doing this again next month with Zoe.
Yippee!
And also the same books. So please leave a review for us in Apple Podcasts and take a screenshot of your review and email us at andy@marriagekidsmoney.com. And if you don't have Apple Podcasts, you can go to where, Zoe?
You can go to Spotify.
You can go to Spotify.
Spotify is awesome.
It is. It is great. You enjoy Spotify, right?
I really enjoy Spotify.
Who's your favorite artist on Spotify right now?
Olivia Rodrigo.
We got to hit up those tickets. Uh-oh. Maybe tomorrow.
When do they go on sale?
They already went on sale, but I didn't have like the super access.
Oh, you don't have the
American
rich
Express
people access,
pass, so... It's just going to be, it's going to be with the rest of the peeps, you know, so I'll just do that. Anyway, we'll get those tickets, Zoe, hopefully. I mean, we'll see how much they cost. If they're like Taylor Swift cost, you know, prices, I don't know. We'll see. We'll see how much they cost.
Starting today at just $20.
$20? Hey, if they're $20, I'll get you five of them.
Thank you.
In the spirit of growth and inspiration, my daughter Zoe is going to end the show with a quote today from Walt Whitman.
Happiness, not in another place, but this place. Not for another hour, but this hour.
Very good, Zoe. You read that perfectly. Let's not put off our happiness another minute, everybody.
Carpe diem!